Talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to the second hour of Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide and live on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits, and all points of view are welcome. Well, what on the surface seems to be a disturbing development, I don't think is a disturbing development, but I want to talk about it. Tanya Chutkan is a great federal judge in Washington, D.C., and presiding over the Donald Trump trial brought by Jack Smith, special prosecutor for the insurrection and the fake electors and all of that, had set it for trial on March 4. Today, journalists noted it's been taken off the docket. It's not going to go on March 4. There was an intimation of that earlier. She had put another trial on for April 2nd. That didn't concern me as much because, yeah, maybe the Trump trial would go beyond April 2nd. It was very easy then just to take the other one off the calendar. By taking this off the calendar, it's a mute recognition that he has successfully delayed this with his appeal. So I want to talk about that. I want to talk about what can be done about that. Here's the deal. She was on track for the March 4 trial. Trump petitioned, brought a motion to have the case dismissed because he said he had immunity. That's an absolutely frivolous defense to a felony. For instance, if the President of the United States pulls out a gun and shoot somebody in the Oval Office, the Justice Department has said that he can't be prosecuted while he is president. You'd think that the Senate and the House would impeach and convict him, but it takes 67 senators, and Trump can do anything, and you're not going to get 67 senators to convict him. Anything, and I mean that. I mean anything. But what Trump is, in effect, arguing is that if he kills somebody, he had immunity, and even after he leaves the presidency, he can't be prosecuted for it. And one of the judges on the D.C. Circuit, the appellate court, said, so if you killed your opponent, you shot your opponent or had him murdered by hitmen, she used the term the Navy SEALs, you can't be prosecuted. And the lawyer foolishly said, that's right. It's a frivolous defense. He either did or didn't commit a felony. He is no longer president. He's being tried for it. If the jury acquits him, fine. But if they convict him, he has no immunity now that he's not president, not for having committed a felony. Now, the D.C. Circuit held oral argument on January 9. They could easily have issued a decision from the bench. When I clerked on the Seventh Circuit for Judge Thomas Fairchild, the chief judge, one of the great judges in Wisconsin history, he was the Wisconsin nominee to the Seventh Circuit. Seventh Circuit is a federal court, sits in Chicago, handles federal appeals from Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin. He was the chief judge. I saw cases where they issued it from the bench. They'd say, all right, oral arguments concluded. And then they'd whisper to each other, and the chief judge or the presiding judge would say, we've looked at the briefs. We're going to issue a written decision, but you should know that your defense is denied, for instance, in this case. They didn't do that, and they've held it up almost a month. Now, why are they doing that? I have the feeling, and keep this in mind, there are tarantulas on the Supreme Court, six of them. But there are scorpions who would aspire to be tarantulas who are sprinkled throughout the federal judiciary. One of them is Eileen Mercedes Cannon down in Mar-a-Lago, who's essentially a Trump slave, a Trump lawyer, and yet she's the judge. There's this fellow Kaczmarek in Amarillo, Texas, who's the one that just flat out banned the abortion pill and a lot of other things. He does whatever the Freedom Caucus wants, whatever. And there are a couple of others like that. Fortunately, most of the judges aren't like that. And I don't want to give the impression that just because a judge is a Republican, or even if he was appointed by Trump, that somehow he's that way. But there are increasingly some of them. I do not know if any of them are on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. But sometimes you have people on the Court of Appeals who want to be fancy. They want to show how smart they are. They want to be recognized, hopefully, to be selected for the Supreme Court someday. So at least one of these clowns, at least one of these clowns is holding this up so that they can write a concurring opinion or a dissent or something else, or somehow modify it so it goes back to Tanya Chutkan for further consideration. They may say, all right, well, it's absurd to say that he has immunity for anything, but for this particular case, does he have immunity? She's already said he doesn't have immunity. She'll say it again. He'll appeal again. You see what's happening? Every appeal requires a brief. It requires oral argument. It gives a chance for further appeal. He is slow rolling this thing to get as far into the summer as possible, so that if he's the Republican nominee in July in Milwaukee, he'll then say, hold off for the trial till after November. And at some point, there's enough political legitimacy just because of his nomination by the Republican Party. It puts a lot of pressure on the judges. It puts a lot of pressure on the judges. And that's exactly what he's doing. That's exactly what he is doing. Now, he has to do this in a couple of other states. Let's take Fannie Willis down in Georgia. They did opposition research, found out that she was having a romantic relationship with one of her fellow prosecutors. That is not a conflict of interest. If she were having a romantic relationship with the judge or with defense counsel, that would be a conflict of interest. But they're on the same page. They're on the same side. It's not a conflict of interest. Here is what is going on. The Georgia legislature passed a law giving a commission that they control the right to yank prosecutors, and they seem to be setting her up for an impeachment because they want to protect Trump. They want to protect Trump. She's a single woman. This guy, his name is Nathan Wade, is a very, very fine lawyer, former judge, special prosecutor, and he is separated and going through a divorce. They can date whoever they want. It's not the Georgia legislature's responsibility or interest at all. She put in a with attachments, apparently over 100-page affidavit. And in it, she said, look, at the start, when I retained him, and he was retained at what's called a lo bono rate, not a pro bono rate, and it goes to his law firm, but it's $250 an hour. And I know that sounds like a lot of money, but no lawyer nowadays, especially in a large firm, charges that unless they're doing it on a semi-pro bono basis because of the public interest in it, and that's why they call it lo bono. This money, that has to be used, by the way, to cover office overhead, secretary salaries, everything else. He put in an affidavit today in which he said, we did develop a romantic relationship, but we'd been friends before, and it was after I was retained. There's nothing wrong with that. Now the Republicans are saying, well, they went on a trip together, and he paid for it. Did she reimburse him, or is that a gift? Hey, if they're dating, that's their business. This is a lo bono rate. We're going to the lines. Jean of Eau Claire, my friend. Thanks for calling, Jean. What's in your mind today?
Hi, Matt. Great show as usual. You know, these people are making a mockery of our justice system. And all of those judges that are playing this game and don't lay the hammer down on this guy, what's to say all people can start utilizing? Oh, I'm going to investigate somebody that's prosecuting me and they happen to have a date with somebody that I can make look real bad, you know, maybe I'll do that and I'm going to appeal. I mean, this is a mockery, and he's doing it every day. This is why this guy has never been convicted of a crime. It is just appalling, Matt. And those people that are sitting on this stuff need to start looking at what America thinks of this legal system and also the Republican control or influence on these systems need to be stopped, and also the very rich that are getting away with all kinds of stuff behind this thing, putting in their candidates, getting laws the way they want to, need to be investigated someday when this dirty, rotten mess is over, because it's just filthy, and I just can't believe it's happening in our country. Thank you, Matt, and you have a great weekend. You really deserve it. Thank you for all the work you do. Bye.
Well, thank you, Jean, and I love your calls, and excellent call. And let me build on that. There are four criminal cases that he has to extend beyond November, and he's doing it one at a time. In Mar-a-Lago, he owns her. She kneels before him. She is deliberately taking months to decide very routine things. She will kick it beyond November because she is his. She's in his camp. She's representing him, basically. Tanya Chutkin is not. She's terrific. But all of these fake appeals about stupid things like immunity, he's not the president anymore. Bingo, he has no immunity. That's it. This is stuff that they are taking their sweet time at, largely, in my view, not because they're scorpions in the D.C. circuit or tarantulas, but because they are full of themselves, pompous as hell, and they're trying to make themselves look fancy. But then Fannie Willis, they're trying to take her out because she dates this guy, single woman. The guy's going through a divorce. And so what? And then they have Alvin Bragg in New York. Well, Alvin Bragg, that's coming up too in March. We'll see what they try to do with that. But of all the cases, that is the one that doesn't have as lurid a fact. So just so you know what's going on with these characters. Okay, coming up, and good for Jeannie, nailing it like she always does. Coming up, step away briefly, and you won't believe what an Indiana legislator did with a gun when he saw some teenagers in the Capitol he did not like.
Go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, here's a piece of work. Here is a piece of work. There's a Republican legislator, state legislator in Indiana. His name is Jim Lucas. He's walking through the Indiana Capitol, and he sees five teenagers minding their own business. You know, clean-cut kids. Now, normally, if you were a halfway decent human legislature, halfway normal, if you went up to him at all, you might say, hey, son, how you doing? Can I help you here? It's exciting. You guys want to go into politics, blah, 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 and, you know. So he goes up to him, and he goes, what are you doing here? And they go, well, sir, we're here with a group called Every Town for Gun Safety Advocacy. Every Town, EveryTown. In other words, every town in Indiana for gun safety advocacy. And they're there in the Capitol. The First Amendment permits them to do that, to convey their opinions on issues, to petition the government. The government means state as well as federal government. Back in the Bill of Rights, it was the state government. It was applied to the federal government through the 14th Amendment in 1868. So what does the guy do? Does the guy go, oh, that's great. You're involved in advocacy. Good for you. And, you know, keep being informed on issues and all that. No, he doesn't do that. Let's say he is one of these guys on the far right who thinks that any discussion of gun safety is wrong, and loves the NRA, even though the NRA goes to Moscow, Russia, hangs around with the Russians where guns are outlawed, and the NRA and the Russians would take your gun away in a heartbeat under the Patriot Act if they thought they could make some money out of it. I'm talking about the leadership. They're bad news. Okay. Put all that aside. What does this guy, Jim Lucas, do? He opens up his jacket and he has a gun. He has a gun in a holster. It's concealed carry. And he said, that's what we got here. Now, the teens were bothered by it. I'd be damn bothered by that. I go into a Capitol, a legislature, a big guy, big man. You know, you're a big man, you're fancy pants. Comes up to me and say, what are you doing here? Kind of a gruff voice. I go, well, I'm here because I believe in gun safety advocacy, and I'm going to talk to a couple of the representatives. And he opens his jacket. And what does he say? You know, fill your hand, draw. What the hell is this? Is this Gunsmoke? Remember Gunsmoke, Matt Dillon? Actually, I like Gunsmoke. The reason I like Gunsmoke is you didn't have to think very hard at the end of the show every time. Matt Dillon would go out on Main Street. Bad guy would go out, slap leather, they'd shoot. Bad guy would go down, Matt Dillon would walk away. The guy must have gunned down, you know, a couple of hundred people and never had a scratch on it. It was quite amazing. But in any event, this clown, Jim Lucas, you know, throws his gun. You know, that's not right. I mean, that's not right. A couple of the kids were kind of concerned about this. I'm kind of concerned about this. I'm kind of concerned about that kind of behavior from public officials. It reminds me when Marjorie Taylor Greene, a couple of the high school kids at Parkland, you know, they were gunned, some of their classmates were gunned down, were walking up to the Capitol in D.C., and she's stalking one of them, a guy, saying, what are you doing? What, you know, scaring the heck out of him. This is a high school kid. I'm tired of these people. Going to the lines. Mark from the SAC, my friend. Thanks for calling, Mark. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, thanks. I had a call from a friend earlier, but this guy you're talking about right now, it's also, he just got convicted of a DUI a few months back. and it was kind of, you know, and got a softer sentence than probably he should have, that because of his position, that which is just kind of disgusting in the first place. But that kind of thing right there, that is a threat act. That's a threat. When you do something like that, that isn't actually a threat. And that the guy should face some kind of censure for doing that kind of thing. And it is just ridiculous that you can get away with it. You know, that people are, you know, people regularly get away with this stuff. I mean that. And thanks again for what you're talking about. Open the show up with today with Trump with his secret room. That I read that, and some of the stuff I saw earlier on that is they're blaming the FBI for not finding everything right away. I go, well, that's like, you know, that. You mentioned that Donald Trump was supposed to turn all that information over in the first place. He wasn't supposed to have it squirreled away in places that the FBI is supposed to go through with some sledgehammers and knock down walls to make sure there's not secret compartments everywhere. I just, you know, that it just gets stranger and stranger. And this thing threatening with firearms is just another thing, is that because that implies a threat. Here I'm a gun owner, and, you know, that, but I don't do concealed carry that. Because I just don't feel the need. But this is just insane that these guys regularly. This is not the first time something like that has happened, and that it needs to be dealt with severely.
Right. Well, you know, to put it in perspective, if he had pulled the gun out of the holster and pointed at them, that's a felony. So he was smart enough not to do that. But if a kid, I mean, these are high school kids, okay? They probably weren't even 18, and they come up and they're all eager. You know, they're in every town for gun safety advocacy. And you know, gun safety can simply mean a red flag law if you've mentally ill people. It can mean lock the gun up or, you know, whatever. And he's going to be a macho big man. And suddenly he opens his jacket and there's a gun in some kind of a holster. And they sort of step back. I mean, and they were bothered by it. No normal person does that. No normal person does that. It's not right. It's not right that they do something like that. And this has happened before. And there's another case where a judge pulled the gun out from under the bench and pointed it at a defendant. This has to be taken care of. This is not just some guy in a bar somewhere with somebody his own age. This is a state representative, and he is in the Capitol, and people are going to petition him on gun safety advocacy, and the article wasn't even clear what they're talking about. What's wrong with gun safety? You out of your mind? I mean, most people who are responsible gun owners want other people who have training. You know, now some states are going with constitutional carry, which means they don't even have a license. They don't even have to have any training. It used to be that you had to have some kind of training. If you don't have training, you know, you have yahoos going in by an AR-15 and have never fired one. And then they start going around and listen, you know, in the Navy, we were on the firing line occasionally. This was not a ship where you expected to be in. We had guns, I mean, on the ship, but the officers weren't, you know, in the old days, what, you have a sword or something and some pirates are jumping at me. But you had to take some small arms training. So we go down to the firing line and practice with 45s. Well, I'd never fired a 45 before in my life. You fire a 45, the kick is like a mule. Your hand jerks up. There was an incident in Milwaukee a long time ago with the African World Festival where a bunch of guys are chasing somebody and he turns around and he fires over his shoulder and shoots, like in the movies, shoots over his shoulder. And of course the gun kicks and he picks off a guy in the beard line. You know, I mean, these are sick people. These are very sick people. Coming up, a lot of advertising, a lot of news, and something about the border deal coming up.
Of a clear blue sky, and the tears that I cried for that woman are gonna flood you, big river, and I'm gonna sit right here.
I need somebody, help, not just anybody, help, you know I need someone.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Joe Madison, my friend, thanks for calling. Joe, what's in your mind today?
I, too, would like to go back to the Mar-a-Lago story. This is the story that you had mentioned in your first hour that has to do with the fact that the FBI apparently missed two rooms during their search of Mar-a-Lago in August, before Jack Smith came on, Prosecutor Jack Smith came on in November. And that includes a hidden room at Mar-a-Lago and then what also might be called a locked closet. And the thing that's kind of interesting about the hidden room is apparently it is, or secret room, whatever you want to call it, it connects to Trump's bedroom. So a couple of questions here that I just don't get. Number one, if there's a secret room that connects to Trump's bedroom, wouldn't the Secret Service know about that? I mean, I would think for security reasons they would know about that, and that information would have passed hands, and they would know that prior to going in. They must have searched and looked at, you know, floor plans about where they're going to go and what they're going to do. As I understand, the warrant said something along the lines of, I'm paraphrasing here, that the FBI was to search all rooms used by the president and staff that could house boxes or documents. Okay, not just boxes, but documents. So you got the one room that's connected to Trump's bedroom, the secret room, that apparently they missed. And then you have a closet, a door that was locked and no one could find a key. And so the response was to say, gee, okay, and leave. I don't get this. You know, one comment I saw said that a guy who does home inspectors, somebody who does home inspectors for real estate deals, said, if there's a room I can't access, I write it up and it's in my report. I'm stunned. I'm thinking of all the ways that the FBI could access that. I mean, number one, go call for a locksmith. Number two, go get a battering ram. And they didn't do that. So I'm kind of left to believe that the FBI did the kind of search that they wanted to. I don't, and maybe not what was required by the warrant. So my question would be, where does this put Jack Smith? I mean, he can't, for him to go back in, doesn't it look kind of bad if he's going to go before a judge and say, gee, the FBI screwed this search, so I would like to redo it? Or is it the kind of thing at this point, because so much time has passed, there's no sense to it? Although, how do we know? We still don't know what was behind that closet, and we still don't know what was in that secret room, correct? I'm curious for your reactions, Matt. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no, very interesting call. Let me defend the FBI and this. In other words, there's a search warrant. Obviously, they tried to avoid the search warrant everything every way they could for a year. They kept saying, please turn these documents over. And, you know, I'm sure they were inadvertent, blah, blah, blah. The full enormity of what he did didn't really become apparent until, you know, they sent a subpoena, and then he lied about complying with the subpoena, and then they did the search warrant. Now, human beings are imperfect. When you're searching a grounds as large as Mar-a-Lago, this isn't like a two-bedroom house in the suburbs. And so it may very well be two things are possible to me. One is when he's president and he's down there, the FBI goes around and secures it. I don't know that he tells them about his secret room, and they don't go sniffing around and not take his word for it. And I have no idea how this secret room is connected. In other words, you know, is it a trap door with a carpet over it? Is it, you know, some sort of door with a credenza in front of it? If I'm an FBI agent or a Secret Service and the president wants to conceal a room, this is his bedroom. You know, I mean, all right, you walk into his bedroom, there's a credenza and a rug, and okay. And if he doesn't say, hey, there's another room there, I wouldn't take it as gospel that they did know. Number two, even if they did, you know, is it a closet and that kind of thing? The search warrant, you go in, they miss stuff anyway. They miss stuff anyway. There's stuff lying around in bathrooms. There's stuff lying around the bridal dressing room in a closet and all that. They obviously missed something because he was loading boxes on a plane to Bedminster. And actually, I forget if that was before the search warrant or after, but whenever it was, they bent over backwards not to do something extraordinary. Now, so I'm not sure they did know about it. Obviously, a real estate agent, if he knew about it, but if this thing is concealed with a rug or a credenza, no, I don't think they pull the furniture out and look around, see if the president's lying to him. They say, you know, can you tell us about any tunnels or whatever? Yeah, there is none. Okay, well, second thing, though, I would say is that what does he do now? Can he get a search warrant to go back in and look at the closet and the, and I'll talk about the closet in a second, the hidden room? Sure. Do I think that there's anything in either one of those now? No, I don't. Not after he is putting stuff on a plane and flying it to Bedminster. A better question might be, should they search Bedminster? And frankly, I've always thought that they should have, but it can be long gone beyond that. He has properties in New York City, Trump Tower. He has properties all over the place. He has other golf clubs. He's a golf club in Scotland. The real question to me is, who is he going to sell these to? Nobody goes to these lengths without intending to get some value out of them. With regard to the closet, I agree with you. And there's a lock, you know, break the lock. They know how to do that. But the fact that he hired a locksmith to change locks while his lawyer's in the basement, I mean, is pretty, I mean, that to me is very, very evidentiary of criminal intent. I mean, there's no question about it. If they missed one closet in all of Mar-a-Lago, they're human. You know, they ask somebody, they ask Walter Nauta, it's a broom closet. Nothing in there. Okay, well, should they have searched it? Sure. Thanks a lot for calling. Great, great call, as always. I'm going to take you in order. Do not hang up. Tom of Madison, my friend, you're next. What's your mind today, Tom?
Hey, your gun story about Jim Lucas really kind of hit a chord there with all the violence these guys are coming up with. So I called Jim Lucas's office, and I spoke to one of his staffers, and I said, you know, you guys, really, this is getting to the point where it's, you know, you're behaving like six-year-olds with your guns and stuff like that. And I said, plus, you know, when it comes to violence, the head of your party is got to be the one of the most violent people you can think of. And he said, that's not true. He said, Speaker Houston has never said anything violent or participated in any act of violence. I said, who is Speaker Houston? And he's the head of our party. I said, no, the head of your party is Donald Trump. He's no, The Indiana Republican Party is headed by Speaker Todd Houston. So he was too ashamed to even say Trump was in their party. It was pretty cool.
That's a terrific call, Tom. I'm really glad you did. I've often wondered when we're on the line of this, like this, how many people do that kind of stuff. They'll Google something or they'll call somebody. That's a terrific call. Thanks a lot for calling. Wisco Paul, my friend, you're next. What's your mind, Wisco Paul?
Happy Friday, man. Speaking of the FBI, Comey is one of the reasons, maybe the reason, Trump got elected in the first place to beat Hillary. There's too much to go into the into there today, but Durham is the reason Trump may not be prosecuted until November. Biden appointed Garland, and Garland just dropped the ball on this whole thing, or something would be done by now. So there's a good chance Trump will skate into the election in November because we have an attorney general that wouldn't get involved in time with this whole Trump mess. And I hope something's going positive with the border. You said you were going to speak about it. I hope you do, because that's a big deal right now. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Yeah, two things. One is I am disappointed with what Garland did. He could have appointed Jack Smith a year earlier. And if that were the case, a year ago, you'd have all this stuff and there'd be plenty of time for a trial. By delaying it the way he did, and I don't think he did it on purpose. I think basically he's so cautious and wants to be liked, he was afraid to do it. He was timid. He likes to be present and pleasant and have everybody like him. And you can't do that when you're a prosecutor. By doing it the way he did, he's forcing Jack Smith to do what? Have a criminal trial in the middle of the Republican convention? The Republicans will nominate him because Nikki Haley probably is not going to go anywhere. And then if you have, you know, one of the two principal parties in the country ratifying Trump, there's a political political legitimacy overlay to some of these decisions. Some judges will then say, yeah, I'll delay the trial till December. But if Trump gets elected, God forbid, and I don't think he will, he doesn't get sworn in until January 20th. But the fact of the matter is that to then do a trial in December and what, put him in jail? You see what I mean? This should have been done a year ago. And another thing I'll say, Jack Smith, I think the world of him, should never have filed anything in the Mar-a-Lago area. He's going to get Eileen Mercedes Cannon, who's a Trump lawyer, basically, is what she is. He could have filed it. Venue was correct. Jurisdiction was correct in Washington, D.C. That's where he should have filed it. Okay, Mike Versailles, you're next. Mike, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Matt. I was thinking, you know, for the search from Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
Wasn't, Trump would be kicked out of the house, but wouldn't Secret Service still be in that house or place? They're going to know everything
right
about that. And why didn't they tell anything about it? So,
right. No. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Caught up. There should be some kind of checking up on them people, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
Mike,
you're raising it. Because if you're a Secret Service, if you're loyal, got to be loyal or whatever. But if you're doing something wrong, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, Mike, you raised a very good point, and it's a spinoff Joe and Madison did, too. But here's the reality. Think of this, the historical background of this. When the FBI showed up for the search warrant, the Secret Service was there. There's no question about it. But they had to interface and talk. You know, if a bunch of guys come walking in with guns and they're FBI agents, the Secret Service has guns, you're liable to get a friendly fire situation. You don't want that. So the Secret Service and the FBI did talk about it. But one thing you got to remember, the Secret Service was not part of the search. They stood back. And number two, a number of the Secret Service detail were loyal to Trump. And a couple of them resigned right afterwards, right after he lost, because you remember the Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony that some of the Secret Service basically were protecting Trump, which is fine, but they also tried to get Mike Pence to get into a limousine, and they were going to whisk him away to effectuate the Green Bay sweep on January 6th. So some of the Secret Service were more pro-Trump than they were pro-America. Let me put it that way. So it doesn't surprise me at all that the Secret Service would not tell the FBI what to search or what not to search, number one. Number two, you're assuming that the Secret Service also knew about the hidden room. Now, I do not know what is meant by hidden room in this context. I've not seen the details in the affidavit, if there is going to be an affidavit coming out. But if the secret room is a trapdoor in his bedroom into it, or a big credenza or a bookcase right up against the wall, no, I don't think the Secret Service in his private quarters that he owns and he's owned for a long time starts pulling stuff apart. You know, they might say to him, look, Mr. President, is there any other form of access to this room? No, there isn't. The windows, that's it. I don't necessarily believe that Trump disclosed the secret room. And if he didn't, I don't think they go around doubting his word and start tapping on walls. You know, I mean, remember the old mystery movies set in the 19th century where there's a creek and you know, a pair of eyes come looking out of a picture and all that. The guy's a weird guy. I'm not sure that he did anything for him. Okay, coming up, we're going to step away, and now we're going to talk about the border deal. I see you on the line. Do not hang up. Get back to you shortly.
Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me, help me, help me.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. David of San Francisco, my friend. Thanks for calling, David. What's in your mind today?
Yeah, well, thanks, Matt. I don't know if you've ever seen or studied, like, Matahari. There were a lot of books written about World War One and the spies that used the big hotels, you know, the famous old hotels of all of Paris and Berlin and all the different places. And they make a point, like you were talking about someone behind the painting. Well, that was very normal 100 years ago. And I would think that a guy like Donald Trump would make use of a thing like that in his big places as well as his dumps, because blackmail was a major part of, and still is apparently, a major part of his lifestyle. All of this hidden money that he seems to have access to seems to be coming from in the obeisance. You know, all of these famous Republicans, you know, changing their tune on a heartbeat. You know, they hate him, but then all of a sudden they love him. Well, that really smells of blackmail. And so I, and then a second layer of it, it talks about the money launderers of World War One, who dragged the war on forever, and that they didn't really care who won. They really were into currency speculation. And that smells like what's going on with Congress and the government shutdown and the border, the fake border issue, where they pretend that they're not going to have a budget this year unless the border is solved, and they will not solve the budget because they want to use the border as a political issue. And so they will have a government shutdown, which would really suit the currency speculators, because America's credit rating would just drop like a stone. So I just think about World War One and all of the intrigues of them, and history repeating itself with a guy like Donald Trump.
Yeah. Interesting call. And I got to say, I have a weakness for some of those really grainy old movies where a couple of guys are sitting in the lobby of a hotel and there's a picture of a guy, and suddenly they get up to leave and the eyes follow them. I get a kick out of that kind of stuff. I don't get a kick out of it when we're talking to president doing this and probably concealing it from the Secret Service, quite frankly. But let me talk about the deal. Schumer announced today they have come to a deal in the Senate. And I remember something. You have James Lankford of Oklahoma. You have Thune of South Dakota. You have Moscow Mitch. And these sort of, they're very conservative people, but they're not flat out bonkers, flat out Trump nuts. And apparently the Republicans and the Democrats have come to a deal. Now, a lot of them, like people like Cruz and people like Rand Paul and Hawley and the real bad ones, Mike Lee, are not going to go along with it. But what that says to me, it's going to pass the Senate. It's going to be released today or over the weekend, and they'll vote on it Monday or Tuesday. What that says to me is that you'll have their firebrands, right-wing nuts, that will oppose it. But even if they go unanimous consent and filibuster, there are enough Republicans who have said baloney, we'll stick with the deal, and that means it'll then go to the House. If it does pass, and Schumer wouldn't say that, quite frankly, if he weren't certain about it, and it's voted on Monday or Tuesday, then it goes to the House. Then Johnson has to decide what he's going to do. He can stick it in his pocket and not bring it to the floor, but then we are going to run out of money the first week in March. And those pilots and those soldiers that are getting bombed in Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, some of them now, the Red Sea, the Houthis, Iraq, they ain't getting paid because of the Republican Party. And they weren't going to get promoted because of the Republican Party for 10 months last year. So I think Johnson is going to have a hard time trying to pull that off. He can't possibly have that happen. He could try to put through a continuing resolution and limp us along another 6 weeks, which will then screw up our bond rating even more, result in more interest we have to pay that's totally unnecessary, and also signal to China that maybe we wouldn't do anything about Taiwan, signal to Russia that we're not going to do anything about Ukraine and enable our enemies. That's what the Republican Party is doing. My suggestion is this. Cornyn, and this is the guy from Texas who I don't care for, but he's not as crazy as Cruz. Cornyn said, you know, we can't get to the border. He said, I'll vote for this thing, but we're not going to be able to deal with it because of Trump in the House. I mean, that's basically what he said. So why don't we just vote on aid to Ukraine and Israel? And there's also some humanitarian aid in there for Gaza. Let's vote for that, pass that, and then we'll keep talking about the border. Now, I would prefer to see them do everything, but it's essential that we get aid to Ukraine and Israel. It's essential that we do that, in my judgment. And so, I mean, at some point, they've got to go and beat up Mike Johnson. Say, look, you little punk. Yeah, I know you're the speaker, you're second in line to the president and all that, but you're nothing but a punk from Louisiana, okay? And you're lucky as hell you're here. You probably pinch yourself every day thinking, my God, am I lucky? Well, yes, you are lucky. So here's what you're going to do. And just the party leaders have to say that kind of stuff. And they've got to basically get Trump out of this equation. And yes, there will be many, many of the Freedom Caucus who yelp and moan. But then what he does is he should do exactly what he did on that $78 billion tax cut. The child tax care credit. He put it on the floor because it had one majority vote in the Republican caucus, like 107 to 106 or something. You put it out there and you go to Hakeem Jeffries, say, Hakeem, you're going to be coming up with 200 Democrats, aren't you? And he says, yes. And if he says no, then Biden and Schumer are on the line to him saying, say yes. And then there'll be 350 votes for Ukraine aid, for Israel aid, some humanitarian assistance for Gaza. And we show unity. And then you can keep fooling around and screwing around all you want on the border. I don't like it. Something's got to give, okay? Something's got to give, and it's going to start giving next week. Okay, we're coming to the end of the show. Great show. Great callers, as always. This show is the callers. It's about the callers. Everybody have a good weekend. And stand by for another great show, Devil's Advocate with Diamond Crute. Matt Flynn Direct will be back same time, same place Monday. And I'm signing off for today.
One life.
in a world that keeps on pushing me around, but I stand my ground and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand my ground.